Support for the Media Project comes from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a Master of Arts in Communications to advance careers in media, PR, and journalism. Fuller part-time options, 518-454-5143. And Rosenbaum Media Group, a digital communications agency integrating high-definition video into PR, marketing, advertising, and social media campaigns. Big-picture thinking for local and national clients. RosenbaumMedia.com. From Northeast Public Radio, this is The Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known.
The Media Project is underway. We're going to have all kinds of thoughtful, we hope, interesting, we assume, commentary about the media issues of the week. I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union, here with Judy Patrick, editor of the Daily Gazette of Schenectady, and Dr. Alan Shartok, the CEO of Northeast Public Radio.
I've wanted to ask you guys a question for a long time, if I may. I mean, here you are. You're both the editors of these two papers in adjoining cities.
Adjoining.
Yes. And you sit here with each other, you know, and so you're competitors to some degree. Do you hate each other?
Oh, it's vicious. Oh,
man. No, but what's it? I want to get in your heads. What is it you're really thinking as you're sitting next to each other? Do you say, this guy's a jerk or this woman is just giving me trouble? I mean, what do you say?
You know, we're in the same profession, so we respect each other as professionals, but we're also very strong competitors.
Yeah.
But that's when it comes to the product. But on a personal level, I mean, we respect any journalist doing any job, and the Times Union does a great job.
So you respect any journalist? I mean,
well, all right, I take that back.
You respect some guy on the New York Post who makes up interviews? I mean, who might make them up anyway, because we never know who they are.
I think people would be surprised by how much cooperation we actually end up having. Or, you know, we compete on stories, but we can share some content. We think about ways, because we can't afford to do everything ourselves anymore. I'm sure Judy's going to have some thoughtful thing that I can, now that I've given this generality, but there are areas where we do collaborate,
yeah,
and work together.
As the kid told his mother when she said to him, eat your food and remember the starving kids in Europe, and he said, Mom, name one.
Yeah.
Well, no, we cooperate on distributing newspapers in some areas. We we share advertising in terms of the makeup of advertising. One newspaper will make it up and share it with the other. The other thing is we share the same ideals. I mean, we are both seeking the truth.
Oh, that's so interesting, though, that you said something that's even more interesting than that seeking truth stuff. and that was that one makes up the ad and shares it with the other newspaper, so you don't have to do it twice.
That's right. And we deliver each other's newspapers in our respective markets does make life a little bit... because why do you need to spend money on two carrier forces when the same car is going by these houses in the neighborhood?
So. Well, I'm a little alarmed by this. I'll tell you why. Because years ago, I heard that the Times Union and the Schenectady Gazette were about to go to war in each other's territories and to try to make inroads. And then all of a sudden, that didn't happen. Could that have been some kind of collusion or something like that? No, I don't think so.
No, I think it's just a recognition that in the core markets of each of these newspapers, it doesn't make sense to try to do a competition. We're not going to have success if we try to drive the Times Union into the areas where the Gazette is has for years been very strong. Likewise, some of the Albany County neighborhoods where the Gazette is strong.
So, okay, I'm satisfied.
To our listeners, by the way, in Sacramento, who are listening for the first time, KKDO in Sacramento, an alternative music station. And, of course, that means that this show is probably airing at a key moment in the format of the
3
day.
In the morning.
Yeah,
maybe.
But we're very happy to hear you folks in Sacramento. And so here we are in the state capital of New York beaming into you. And so they have no idea what we're talking about, Albany, Schenectady.
Well, no, it doesn't matter because the generic material, like two newspapers competing, is what's interesting.
Also,
the fact that we don't pull any punches around here. We tend to, fight.
Now, around the country, people are paying attention to this New York City mayor's race.
Oh, everybody wants to know about Weiner.
And the interesting thing about Anthony Weiner of recent days, as we're speaking here, is the ridiculous broadside launched by his press spokeswoman against an intern, a former intern, who had the temerity to speak out about what she had seen in the campaign.
You can't read all the names.
No, I can't say all the things that
we lose our license.
The press secretary said, it described as a curse-filled rant.
Now, the secretary is a woman herself, right?
Yes, yeah, it is. Okay. The communications director named Barbara Morgan has really fired back with such a nasty string of words that it has people in politics marveling. And the only thing that you can say about this in the sense of what lessons we learned from this is, if you're a flack, understand when you're on the record and when you're off
Which
the record.
Which is always. You open your mouth, you're on the record.
And the other thing is, even if you're even off the record, don't say that. Incredibly unprofessional, incredibly indicative that this woman is into power, into mean-spirited attacks on poor interns. I mean, it does not reflect well on the candidate either.
She called her a slut, didn't she? Something slut.
Oh, slut. More than a slut.
Well, yes, slut much bag. Worse. But that's, yeah, I think, the one word you could get. Probably you could have on the radio.
Now, to understand why she's so angry, the intern was on the front page of the New York Daily News with a very glamorous photo talking about how awful the candidate was.
I'm sorry, what does
was.
Glamorous mean anyway?
Glamorous?
Yes.
Well, she's. It was a well-coiffed, beautiful photograph of this young woman.
I see. You're afraid of using anything that might be deemed by an annoyed listener as sexist.
I see. That could be. Yeah. But, you know, the fact is, I mean, many of us have relationships. I have at least had some relationships with people in politics that are always off the record. The understanding is that this person will never speak to me on the record, and that's fine.
So if a governor calls you up and says this is off the record, then it's off the record. And that's exactly who you were talking about, wasn't it?
No, it's not. No. But actually, the governor of this state is very...
prone to get on the phone.
He is very judicious and very careful about always saying, we're off the record here, before he starts launching into his stuff.
And how that works is the reporter's supposed to say, yes, I agree.
Well, that is what you're supposed to say if you say, I don't know. And sometimes you should say that. I mean, you have to be careful, because when you take stuff off the record, then you're blocking yourself from using that. And if you get too sloppy about that as a journalist, you're going to lose access to a lot of information.
Yeah.
So you really can't do that most of the time. This press aide to Anthony Weiner apparently thought she was off the record, but as
here's an interesting thing. I'm sorry for interrupting.
Yeah, it's quite all right.
But I was doing my research this morning in the two tabloids that we get here, and one of them said that Weiner, when asked if he was going to fire her, he said something like, of course not. So sometimes when people say things which they have to take the heat for, they are seen as doing what the principal wanted them to do.
Well, and of course, Anthony Weiner's probably at the point where if he fires anybody else, he's not going to have much staff left. You know, his campaign has been, he's lost his campaign manager.
Was that a pun?
You know, not to sound like a Pollyanna again, as usual.
Yeah, always do, because you are.
But politicians are supposed to be held to a higher ideal. And, you know, in this case, it makes the public realize that these guys, they play a mean game.
Hey, Judy, is there anybody in this world who really believes what you just said?
Yeah, me.
That politicians have to be held to a higher standard?
Well, they do have to be held
we
to a higher standard.
We all know about that.
I love the proposal, actually. I don't know if you've read about this. It's in our paper this morning, as we mentioned, a local civic leader who suggests that we should make lemonade out of the lemons and have a museum of political corruption in Albany to access all that information that's really, really readily available here.
Of political corruption. I like it.
And interactive exhibits.
Absolutely. You know, you too can put money in the pockets of your local officials.
Well, wait, Judy. You just said interactive exhibits. You mean what?
So you'd have a little person you could put money in his pocket.
Oh,
so
I see. I thought you were referring to something else, because quite frequently these scandals are interactive, but they are interactive in either a sexual sense or, you know, a different kind of sense.
No, I'm talking museum terms.
Museum terms. Here we go. All right, on to next topic, which has to do with difficult questions or when questions are inappropriate. Here's the question. This is an interview on Fox TV with the author of the book Zealot, a provocative new biography of Jesus. You know, there are several different theories of the nature of the life of the historical figure Jesus. One of them was that he was a member of a Jewish sect called the Zealots. And that is the theory of the author named Reza Aslan. And in an interview on Fox News, the question that was raised by Lauren Green was, you're a Muslim, so why did you write a book about the founder of Christianity? It was the first question out of the box.
Yeah.
Now, the question is that an inappropriate question, or was she simply seeking a provocative answer?
It's a stupid question.
I'm not answering it.
And I'm curious about whether she wrote it herself or was handed it. And I think it's irrelevant.
You do?
Yeah. I think you can ask the question, what if you're a Muslim, what makes you interested in studying religion? Or does that make it more interesting for you to study religion? But the question of, since you're a Muslim, why did you write a book about Jesus? Seems like it's bigoted.
It's offensive. Yeah.
The person she was interviewing, Reza Aslan, is a scholar of religions. He has various advanced degrees, much the way that you do in political science. Someone might ask you, Alan, why are you, who are a capitalist, why would you be interested in writing about communism if you ever did research into that?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, no, it does come down to this basic feeling of who's in which cave, as we know, or on which team. And to exacerbate it, am I surprised that this was, as you just sort of implied, Judy, that this was done on Fox, you know, in order to provoke? No, I'm not at all. I'm not at all surprised by that.
So you think it was intentional, not just accidental?
Well, I think it was obviously, and these are grown-ups, these people who are asking these questions. It's not as if, you know, they're sophomores in high school. These are people who are grown up and they know what they're doing.
We've heard them make mistakes before, though. That's
in quotes, mistakes.
Yes.
What's interesting is that
this has pushed
the book forward. The book was quote of one of the bookstore owners in California is, since this interview, it has really pushed the book sales. Quote, it's moved now out of the NPR realm and it's gotten into the broader culture, she said. No offense.
I
to
like
NPR,
that out of the NPR realm, which means, of course, you people walking around with your noses stuck up into the air with your educations and your namby-pamby nonsense.
All you smart people who listen to public radio.
Right, we know about that.
Jeez, we know about that. Yeah.
Out of the NPR realm and into the, what word will we use next? And into the sewers? I mean,
the broader culture, you know, what can you do? Well, all right. Speaking of NPR, Scott Simon did something interesting. NPR host Scott Simon, who's a longtime host of NPR's Weekend Edition Saturday, is one of those journalists who has embraced the new media, embraced social media. And what he did that was remarkable was that he was tweeting throughout the time that he was sitting at his mother's bedside as she was dying.
Oh, my God.
It's a very interesting thing. And the question that you might pose is, at what level does the kind of natural reaction that we have as human beings get a little bit too self-reflective if we're journalists.
Or exploitive.
Well, there you go.
If you want to put it that way. However, it is, I think, the role of a journalist to relate to phenomena that we all go through. We all lose parents. And what's that like? What can we expect? How painful is it? How do you handle it? So I'm not so sure we can criticize Scott Simon for offering us that.
Oh, yeah, and he's gotten a lot of praise for this as well. He has tweeted about his personal life before, and what people are saying is unusual in this case is the topic, death, that people don't tweet that often about death.
Well, as you know, Freud, you do know about this, right? Freud thought that the basic element of life, why we go on, was Eros, love, versus Thanatos, death. And so it was, you know, if that's what motivates most of us, and here's Scott Simon dealing with one of the sides, or both sides of that, good for him, and we might have properly think of him as a Freudian.
I don't think it was Eros love. I think it was probably one of those other Greek, philia or agape. They have many words for love in Greek, you know, so
yeah.
I don't think that it's Eros with respect to his mom.
Well, so...
To help you out there, since you're the only one in the room with a PhD,
Okay, I didn't want to get into that. But in fact, you know, Freud did do a lot of talking about that very thing.
Yeah. Well, there you go.
You know, back to Scott Simon, I think Twitter gets criticized a lot for being inane or trivial. But in this case, Simon showed that the medium can be powerful. I mean, a lot of people were attracted to his Twitter feed and got a lot out of it.
No, I think it's good.
And, you know, to give, if one of the goals of journalism, maybe you could say the fundamental goal of journalism, is to give people a true sense of the world beyond their own experience. Mm-hmm. And I often say this when people criticize us for going to knock on the doors of families who have lost a loved one. that we are giving people access to that emotional realm that we hope to not have to deal with ourselves, but we're giving people this insight into what those feelings are. In the case of Scott Simon, what he's doing is giving people, as you say, this view of experiencing death up close. The only thing that is... I cringe sometimes when I have, and we've probably all experienced this. We have a columnist, for example, who would write about a loved one's death. Is this a bad thing? Are we taking advantage of our position? Here's an example. We had a wonderful column written about a couple of weeks ago by our reporter Paul Grondahl, who is our most honored reporter.
He's
won all
these
awards
good.
From all over the place and has had books praised by the New York Times Book Review and so on. So Paul wrote a column about a personal experience golfing. He went. He likes to play golf, and on the golf course, he had something happen to him that has never happened to him before. A guy absolutely flipped out and flung his club. The club bounced and banged into Paul's knee at the point that he had to be treated with first aid at the pro shop and so on. And so Paul wrote about this, and it was a really interesting column, I thought. A lot of people did. He actually got a lot of reaction to it. It got huge traffic online. Subsequently, we received a letter to the editor of criticism that we're publishing that says he's taking advantage of his role as a journalist by writing about this because an ordinary golfer having a similar circumstance wouldn't have found a way to get this into print, and the guy who threw the golf club wouldn't therefore have been banished from ever playing on this golf course again.
Well, this is absurd. As you know, Rex, I'm a columnist for the Berkshire Eagle and appear every Saturday on their split page and have for a long time. And there's one thing about being a columnist that you have to remember, and that is you have to write a column every week.
Yes, indeed.
And that,
it's not always easy.
And that which is closest to us, but I mean, I think it's absurd to say that a columnist shouldn't write about something that is close to them or that happened to them, because frankly, it goes to show that it's going to be repeated by people on the outside again and again and again. A lot of people go on the golf course and somebody didn't say four and they got hit in the head or something like that.
Yeah, and is it true that the guy got banished just because of the story? I'm not sure.
Yeah, well, and you know, even if it had been somebody else talking to us about this, I think we would have written a story about it. It just happened that we had a really good writer who had this happen to him personally.
Yeah.
Somebody else
had
related the story. That's a good thing. Paul also wrote a column about the death of the family dog. And
I write about my dog, Murray, all the time.
And people fact, love it, right?
In fact, they do, and Murray writes my columns quite frequently.
And folks comment on how much better they are, right? This
right.
is a wonderful thing.
That's right.
If you're just joining us, it's the Media Project from Northeast Public Radio. He's Alan Shartok, Judy Patrick, I'm Rex Smith, and we're happy to have you with us here as we discuss the media issues of the week. The continuing difficulties of the print environment are shown in the latest from the Cleveland Plain Dealer, which laid off 50 people this past week, about half of them from the newsroom. The Plain Dealer, one of the great newspapers in the Midwest.
How did you get that name, Rexy? Do you know?
Plain. Well, plain is in the plains,
oh, the
you
plains.
Know,
yeah,
flat,
yeah.
Although that part of Ohio is not as flat as some of the plains out further west, but plain. Or is it Plain Dealer? You know, they're dealing things plainly.
Straight. They give it to you straight. Judy, what do you think?
You know, I thought maybe it was a two newspapers had merged, but I don't know.
The Plain
and the Dealer.
The Plain and the Dealer. Well, here's the Plain. There are great newspaper names out there. You know, Elkhart, Indiana has The Truth. Isn't that a great name?
Truth. The Daily Truth.
I get it in The Truth.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, so the Plain Dealer is just the latest of the Newhouse newspapers to go to reduced number of days of the week of print delivery and therefore changing over to a real digital staffing. This has happened in New Orleans and in Syracuse and a number of other cities that
your
are
your paper
served.
To some degree, right?
No, we're not. We're 7 days a week.
No, but you've had to lay off.
Oh, we all have reduced staffing, yes.
Yeah. Right. Does that
true.
Change? The nature of what we are reading. For example, in my newspaper, the Berkshire Eagle, I see a great deal of crime reporting now. Somebody in the court is there, and it'll quite frequently make the front page. Is that because you guys do research and see what people are most interested in and then give it to them, or an ease of doing it. You put one guy in the court and all day long he's there and he's writing stories. Judy's shaking her head no, and Rex is shaking his head yes.
No, I'm saying it's not an easy thing to determine what to put in a newspaper and what not to put in a newspaper. And when you have fewer people to do it, what you focus on and what you don't focus on, and it's something newspapers evaluate all the time. It's not easy.
And
the last 5 years has been incredible.
Answer if I ever heard one.
But you do have to. You can't write as many stories, but you have to figure out what is not important for the public to know, and what do they really want to know.
That's what I just said.
Yeah.
They really want to know about some heinous criminal who kept his mother, used her diabetic syringes to give himself narcotics. Now, there's something a little different.
Yeah, we're all going to write that one up.
But, you know, I think the danger that you're alluding to, Alan, is that we will do what's easier because it's accessible. And
precisely,
that's where crime news comes in. That's why television is so filled with crime news, because it's really easy for a news director in a TV station to say to this pretty young reporter, male or female, go out there and stand in front of the yellow police tape and do a stand-up.
You are so bright, Rex. I heard it. I admired you for it. It was, you saw what the potential comments were going to be. You said a pretty young reporter, male or female. That was a brilliant move on your part, Rex, and I want to commend you for it.
Actually, I was thinking of a young man with his hair tousled in the wind, standing in front of the yellow police tape saying, police told me that, and giving you the, and it is cheap. It is literally inexpensive to do that kind of reporting, and it's easy, and you can fill a newscast with it without having to be too thoughtful.
Well, you have dodged the dodgeball one more time.
But the fact is, as Judy says, we try to, increasingly, we have to focus on content that we think is fundamental to what we do. That is, what differentiates us from the competition. And so our sensibility is, for example, crime news is not one of those things that we would focus on, because TV can do that. So why would people bother to get their crime news from the Times Union the next morning?
Well, because it's salacious and in detail in a way that they may have missed on the television.
Could be. But more likely, they're going to turn to us for more substantive stuff, because that's what we in print can do that the TV folks don't.
Yeah, but you often talk about explosion de texte, as they say in college. In other words,
there he goes with that foreign language stuff again. You know, we had Greek, now we've got...
But you explain things at great length, and when people have their coffee in the morning, they say, golly, as you always say, golly, gee whiz, Martha, look at this. The guy was using robbing his mother's diabetic the insulin injectors and leaving her in squalor and filth. I would never, ever see that on the television, because I don't watch that stuff. But I sure as heck would read it in the newspaper the next morning.
Well, I don't know. I listen to AM radio newscasts occasionally in this market. Not as much as I used to, actually. Somehow.
You like to have your newspaper read to you?
Yeah, right. That's right. But, you know, some mornings it sounds like it's all sex abuse in this market. I mean, they have one story after another involving sex crimes, and I just don't quite get it.
You get it. You understand that that's what fascinates people. That's why Anthony Weiner is Anthony Weiner. That's why we're looking at him the way that we are. We say, golly, gee whiz, Martha, look at this.
Unbelievable. Anyway, on other kinds of news, finally, out in Montana, the attorney general, a guy named Tim Fox, is trying to block an effort by the Associated Press to get information about the 30,000 or so people in Montana who have concealed carry permits, that is, a permit to carry a weapon in a concealed way. And under state law, it appears that that material ought to be readily available. But the AG is...
AG knowing what side his bread is buttered on and where the votes are.
Is saying no. And, you know, we in the newspaper world are very cognizant of what happened when the Journal News, the paper to the south of us in the New York suburbs of Westchester and Rockland counties, published online this file showing gun ownership. There was a huge backlash that I think we're still dealing with today, right?
Yes, it was put into law. I mean, the law that they passed, the New York Safe Law Act, included the idea that they could, if people don't want their names released, that the government will not release those names.
Hey, if I have a guy who's living next door to me, and I think he's irrational sometimes, this is not the case, by the way. I would want to know whether he's got a gun.
In this case, they do have a law that will take effect that will prevent these names from being released, but that doesn't take effect until the fall. And one of the AP's arguments is the law's not in effect. You've got to do it now.
All right, well, we've gotten to the end of the program, folks. You'll have to tune in next week for more. And again, to the folks in Sacramento, thanks for being a part of us, and anybody else, too. It's great to have you here.
I love it when Judy's here, too, in addition to us.
Us guys. All right, see you next week.
Circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give free cheers for freedom of the press.